magical place we could go. So close your eyes and make a wish for the skies with the angriest, flappiest birds, and the seas with ridiculous fish. The Dutch Arcade Show is here again. It's Friday night and I'm with my friends, Eli, Jared, and Mike most of the time. Mike, come on, let's go to the Dutch Arcade Show.
Hey guys, what is up, and welcome to Tuts Arcade Show, episode number 407, recording live on Friday, July 12th, 2019. This is the special Jared is just getting over being sick episode, and we'll see how long my voice lasts through this episode.
Also getting very close to 420 episode.
Also getting very close to episode 420, which we'll have to have some sort of huge celebration for, because we are such 420 heads. We should wear Juggalo makeup for those
420
episodes.
Fanatics.
Yeah.
Actually, speaking of Juggalo makeup, I read a pretty interesting story about how, like, all this facial recognition software is going so good, but if you're wearing Juggalo makeup, it, like, thwarts all of them.
Imagine, like, our dystopian future, like, 20 years from now, where everyone, like, puts Juggalo makeup on just normally because they don't want to be facial recognized everywhere. I look forward to that future.
I've been given how terrible things are now. That doesn't seem that far-fetched, but we'll see.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So anyway, do we have, should we veer off topic before we start getting on topic?
Do ad copy first.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, as is the case with the last two weeks of episodes, this week's episode is sponsored by Armor Games for their release Void Tyrant. And I will scratchy throat read an ad copy for you about halfway through the show. But we've talked about it before. Void Tyrant is a real good game, and we like it a lot. So.
Yeah. Well, so if you want to talk about weird, creepy, dystopian stuff, Facebook recently changed how their, like, ad stuff works. So you can see a lot more details about the people that are, like, advertising to you. So if you go to, if you open up the Facebook app, and then you go to your profile settings, which is on your profile page, little gear, and then you go to View Privacy Shortcuts, and then Review Your Ad Preferences, and then Advertisers and Businesses. You can see the companies that have, like, uploaded your phone number or email to Facebook to, like, target you. Like, so here, this is what it says. It says advertisers upload a list with your info and advertise to it. So these advertisers have run an ad in the past 7 days using a list uploaded to Facebook containing your information, typically an email address or phone number.
Ugh.
Which the creepy thing is, like, so mine is, like, there's, like, 68 companies as of I'm looking at right now that are advertising to me. Mm-hmm. And, like, you'd be like, oh, 68 companies, like, you know, over the 10 year or 11 years you've been using Facebook that have uploaded your information to them, like, whatever, that seems,
but it's not, right? It's the past 7 days.
It's past 7 days. Yeah. And, like, the crazy part is it's 89 as of today, actually. I'm pulling it up right now. it's like stuff that I don't even know what it is, like, what's like LiveRamp. I've never heard of that. Why do they have my email or phone number? I don't know what PushSpring is. 3Q Digital, I don't know.
I think so I'd be curious to know. So, like, I don't post anything to Facebook, really. Like, I go on it sometimes, and I'll occasionally, like, comment on something a friend posts or something like that. But I don't, like, post anything myself ever. The last thing I posted in the last, like, 2 or 3 years was something about how shitty Facebook is with your privacy or something like that. And I noticed, I don't know if this is a coincidence or not, I noticed I don't think any of my friends list, like, saw it. I think it got, like, dampened because it was a negative towards Facebook link that I shared or whatever. But anyway, I'm not active on Facebook, so I'd be curious to look through mine and see if it's, like, a similar amount of stuff, or if it's, like, the more active you are,
pull it up. I'll tell you exactly where to go. This will be a activity everyone that's listening should do. So, yeah, Facebook open.
Wait, whoops, that's not okay. Facebook open.
All right, hit the little hamburger icon on the bottom right.
Hamburger.
And go up to the top where it says view your profile.
Profile.
Shit, I need to go back out to mine.
Gear icon, maybe?
Yeah, then the gear icon.
Okay.
Then view privacy shortcuts.
All right.
And scroll down to review your ad preferences.
Review your ad preferences. Okay.
And then advertisers and businesses, which is like halfway down.
Okay.
And then advertisers have uploaded a list with your info and advertised to it, and businesses who have uploaded a shared list with your info are the two interesting ones.
Okay, so...
So, like, the crazy thing is, like, so for advertisers that uploaded a list, like, I recognize, like, a lot of these, like, Alaska yeah. Airlines, Apex Legends.
Yeah, I've got a lot of them, and it's a lot of stuff that's, like, my interest sort of thing.
Whereas if you go to, like, the businesses who have uploaded a share list, which you have to go back out to advertisers and businesses and then see all those, yeah. It's like, yeah. I don't recognize a single thing on this list. Like, who are these people, and why do they have...
There's a surprising amount of crowdfunding things in mine. I don't think I've ever... done anything with crowdfunding, and there's some guy that's running for office in Mississippi.
Like it's just, I don't know, it's bonkers. Like it's really crazy to think like how much, like all those people have like some piece of information that then gets linked back to your Facebook profile.
Oh yeah.
And it just
oh,
seems weird. Like really strange and weird, and like don't get me wrong, like I particularly like doing game club stuff, like I totally understand the value of super targeted advertising. Like I get it. Yeah. Like that's really cool to be able to like specifically advertise directly to people that you know are going to be interested in the thing that you're advertising. But yeah. Like it's just really weird when you see like all these companies that like you don't even recognize that like have your phone number or email or yeah. whatever.
Yeah.
Like that seems creepy to me.
No, the second list is definitely strange, but I've got about 42, and then on that top list it's 41. Definitely more relevant on the top list though. It's like Costco and stuff like that. Like I'm sure I've probably clicked on Costco right. things.
Like so another thing they added too that is also sort of interesting is if you see an actual ad in your feed, you can hit the three dots on the top right and then go yeah. to why am I seeing this ad. Uh-huh. So like for me, like I just have an ad for Dyson in my feed and it says there may be, it tells you like, it's based on your activity in the Facebook family of apps, and they're targeting people 25 ages of older that live in the United States. I haven't, allegedly, if someone's like hyper-targeting you, you can see that in there, but I mm-hmm. haven't seen that yet. I get advertised boring shit like pills for when your dick doesn't work and stuff.
So my first ad I came across in my feed is, Roman Health, premature ejaculation is one
oh,
of
yeah, the wipe.
Sexual health conditions guys experience. Why am I seeing this ad? You've seen this ad because Roman Health wants to reach men ages 21 and older who live in the United States. Okay, so just really based broad. On age. Phew! Glad that it's not, I don't know anything too specific about me, I guess. But
yeah, I don't know.
That's
it's just
all very creepy and weird.
Creepy, like it makes, I don't know, like... My problem is like there's so many people I know that I only really communicate with over Facebook or like keep up with because of Facebook. Yeah. And like, I'd love to start deleting these different things that are like so invasive with like collecting information and stuff. But it's like, if I deleted Facebook, like everyone does Facebook events for like parties and stuff. Yeah. And I would just be like,
me. I've been considering getting rid of Facebook for years because like I said, I don't use it really myself or anything. I don't like uploading stuff or sharing things or whatever. But it's so handy to keep in contact with certain people, and Facebook invites are like the thing. And yeah. So, yeah,
like all the breweries near me that do like events do like RSVPs through Facebook, and like it sucks like how much yeah. they get you into that. But
I can't remember if I tweeted this or just thought this would be a good tweet, but with Apple's like stance on privacy and stuff like that. It's kind of sad a social network never worked out for them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because I feel like I love the idea of Facebook and the value of the connections and stuff like that. I hate all the privacy data collection stuff. You know what I mean?
I've
like
been,
that's the number one thing I hate.
I've been adding you on Ping for years know, now, right? trying to get you to respond.
Like, wouldn't it be cool though? Because it's I'll sit back and think sometimes like why isn't there like a Facebook alternative?
Well, there are, you know, but no one uses them. That's the problem.
Yeah, no, but they never take off or whatever. Yeah. And I feel like at least Apple's a big enough company to try and make it work, although I guess Google tried and has failed with that too. But, it's just kind of like a shame because I wish there was just like a nice, clean, private like social network that you could use?
There's one called MeWe, which is MeWe, that is like a privacy first kind of Facebook alternative, but like I signed up for it and like well, it's all like weirdos, you know, like people that are like I would describe as like conspiracy theorists.
I could totally see that.
That yeah. Like they're like the only friends of mine when it did like find friends that showed up was like, oh yeah, of course you would be here.
Yeah.
That's, so yeah. Speaking of weirdos, are you gonna storm Area 51?
No.
Have you heard about this? All right. This is, I swear to God, last off topic thing I have to talk about. So there is an event that I don't really even know like where this came from, but yeah. It's on Facebook. It's Storm Area 51. They Can't Stop All of Us, which takes place on Friday, September 20th at 3 a.m. Pacific time. Right now, there are 981,000 people going or interested.
What?
I mean, it's just like people that clicked like going on the event, but still.
But still.
It's like spawned all these memes. Like it was like one of those things where I like woke up and like looked at Twitter and was like, Area 51 memes? What's happening?
I will definitely be watching that from home. I want to see what happens with all of that.
But yeah, so I guess if you're going to storm Area 51, let us know how it goes.
Yeah, please do. So anyway, moving along to mobile gaming, because this is a mobile gaming podcast for a mobile gaming website. So it kind of makes sense that we should talk about mobile gaming stuff.
Well, there's games on Facebook, let's be real.
What's that?
There's games on Facebook. That was relevant.
Nice segue. We brought it all together. It all makes sense now. So one of the big stories early this week was that Dead Cells has been delayed by over a month. I don't think there was any official like statement about this. I think that people just noticed its pre-order page, which originally said July 18th, I think, now says August 28th. So that's kind of a bummer, but whatever. This is Playdigious doing this port, and they do awesome stuff, and if they feel like it needs an extra month, it's fine. We can wait for that.
Yeah, so for context, the Switch version of this, I feel like, launched too early. I think we talked about that last week or the week before, it got a big update that like basically completely fixed the game. So
yeah,
fingers crossed that that's what's happening with...
I feel like you just said somewhere that this game finally clicked with you and you've been playing it.
Yeah, so Dead Cells, this game's super awesome, and I'm excited for it to come to mobile for people that haven't played it on the Switch or PC or whatever. But I don't know, it's like seems like one of those games to me. Like thinking of playing this without virtual or physical controls kind of breaks my brain. But I'm willing to give them the benefit of the doubt.
Right.
But what's neat about it, and like what had to click for me is that, you know how like most games, like most Metroidvania games, like most games in general, I guess I would say. You take damage when you collide with a monster, right? Like that's just kind of like a universal constant in video games. That and that's kind of how I was playing Dead Cells for the longest time. Being like, oh, I can't touch any of these guys. I'll take damage because it's like a permadeath game. You know, if you die, you start over. And like there's some like long-term progress stuff that you kind of like unlock slowly over time. But by and large, like you lose all the items you picked up and everything else if you die. So he's always paying like ultra conservative, like never getting anywhere near the actual monsters. And then I like accidentally realized that like you can actually just like run straight through monsters if you want. The only time it really matters is like when they're actually attacking.
Oh, interesting.
Which like really like blew my mind because like I don't know if I've ever played a game like that because it was... it's really clever because like once you kind of realize that you go through the game and you start to see like, oh, okay, so there's like a I'm a monster wandering around animation, and that like you can walk right up to him, like jump on top of him, like, you know, be standing right next to him and like don't take any damage. And then they have like a wind up animation that's like the okay, I'm starting to do whatever, which not all monsters have this, like, or there's just this straight like I'm attacking you now animation.
Yeah.
And like you only need to do your little evade move, like to actually avoid an attack. And like the evade thing has like a tiny bit of a cooldown on it. Like it's not crazy, but you can't just be like spamming it constantly.
Right.
So I was like always getting the timing wrong because I was assuming you needed to evade to get like anywhere near an enemy, when in actuality, like you really only need to evade when they're like attacking you.
Yeah.
Which once that clicked in my brain, it was like, the training wheels were off and I was doing amazing in this game.
That's really interesting because I guess I've never really thought about it before, but like just bumping into something, you shouldn't get hurt from that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like that makes a lot of sense that if somebody's not actively attacking you, why are you taking damage?
Yeah.
So that's funny that I've never heard of another game that uses that.
Yeah. I like, once I realized that, I was like, oh man, that's the coolest thing. And like, I was really trying to think like anything else I had come up with where like, that's the case. And like, I really can't.
Yeah. I guess like, I don't even think that's true. Like Mario 2 is going to say you can like jump on enemies and stuff like that. But I think if you just touch one, it will still hurt you. So
yeah.
That's interesting, but that's really cool. I bought this game months ago, so still have yet to, probably a year ago.
It's so freaking good. What's crazy about this game is that you can actually beat it before you like unlock most of the Metroidvania kind of abilities.
Oh, really?
Which is bonkers.
It's meant to be like beaten over and over and over, right?
Yeah, yeah. Like, so I had only... Like, so you get these things called, I think they're runes in the game, and you have to actually, like, find the enemies that drop these runes. And I don't think they spawn every game, or if they do, like, they might be in different locations or whatever, but, like, there's, like, all these, like, basically all the abilities you would expect to see in a Metroidvania game, and that, like, you know, you can activate these, like, teleport stones once you get a certain rune, and you can obviously, like, there's a wall jump thing and other stuff like that. And, like, I was... playing the game for a really long time, doing really well, being like, all right, well, I haven't gotten ability in a really long time, and I feel like I'm really deep in the game.
What am I doing wrong?
Like, when's the next thing I'm going to unlock? And then, like, all of a sudden, I was, like, fighting this guy, and I was like, this feels like an end boss kind of battle.
Yeah.
And, like, sure enough, it was. And it was, I don't know, I guess you can beat it without most of the shit unlocked, which is pretty cool if you're good enough at the actual combat mechanics, which is pretty neat.
Very interesting. I will need to dig into that someday. The funny thing, though, is like, man, there's been so many times where there's a game that comes out, it's popular, everyone loves it, I buy it, whatever. Maybe it just doesn't click. And then down the road, sometimes like a year or more, something clicks and you play through it and you're like, oh my God, I get why everyone loved this game. This game's fantastic.
Yeah. I mean, that was definitely me with Dead Cells very recently.
Yeah, I always like that feeling, and it also reinforces the fact that I don't need to buy brand new games when they're brand new.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
It's okay. The good games are still good a year later, so been trying to tell myself that, but I still buy a ton of crap I don't play.
Oh, another another game recommendation on the Switch that recently really turned me on was The Minute, which is also available on mobile now.
Yeah,
This game
I love that game.
Super, super fucking good.
Yeah.
Did you guys publish a review or anything of it? If you did, I missed it.
We have a review, and it was the game of the week a few weeks back when it launched. Actually, plays really well on mobile. So.
Well, yeah, it's not like so. Minute, if you haven't heard of it, is a almost reminds you of like a Game Boy game in a way.
Yeah.
In that like
very one bit kind of Downwell style.
Yeah, yeah, like black and white style graphics, and like the whole idea is your guy survives for a minute at a time, but the items you pick up persist over death.
Yeah.
And what really blew my mind about that game is that like there are so many items.
Yeah.
And it's like absurd the amount of different paths there are to get to the end boss. And I don't even know if you really need to beat the end boss, or just like the couple times I played it, like that was just kind of like how I got routed into it. But
yeah, it's somebody described it, I forget where I saw this, but somebody described it as like the item trading meta game from Link's Awakening, but in like a amped up own game form or whatever. I feel like that's really true, so you get this one item, then that guy needs it, but he gives you that item, it goes on and on and on. Minute's awesome. MINIT.
It's really cool too, because like you get in these situations where it's like, like, for instance, there's this desert in the game, and I was like, all right, fuck it. Like, I'm going to spawn and immediately go in the desert and see how far I can go and, if I hit, like, anything.
Yeah.
And there's an item that you actually get in the desert that, like, man, I picked it up with, like, 1 second to spare. And it was weird, like, how exciting, like, such a, like, you know, one-bit color palette, sort of black and white.
Well, you think that they tuned it to that because you die every 1 minute. So they're like, okay, what can we put that's, like, absolutely... one exact minute away, you know what I mean, for the people that, you know, once you know where something is and you just bolt towards it, you can just barely make it. I feel like it was everything was really just designed really well around that. And just learning the concept of that game before I played it, I was like, I don't see how this is going to work And then I played it and I was like, wow, this is just brilliant.
So. Yeah, I played that first on the Switch, but you were saying it's also available on mobile, and like there's absolutely nothing about that game that wouldn't translate beautifully to
touchscreen virtual stuff, stick. So. It plays just fine.
Yeah.
And it suits itself well with the minute chunks or whatever. So
yeah. But Dead Cells, whew, I can't wait to see how this plays on mobile, because man.
Yeah.
Super technical game that I don't know if they figured it out, like it's gonna be a really cool thing.
So unfortunately it won't be coming out next week. It's now August 28th, but we'll be looking forward to that one. So.
Whatever.
This was a fun story for me and quite a big surprise.
Yeah, this is like a double take news story. Triple take even.
So Apple re-released their Texas Hold'em game. And if you remember, I actually had it wrong. I thought this was a launch game when the App Store launched in 2008. It was not. It actually came out like a month later or the following month.
Close enough.
Yeah, but anyway, my personal history with iOS devices is that the iPhone was announced. It was expensive for the time. And I think I was also locked into my carrier at the time. It was only AT&T. And so for all these reasons, I really wanted one. I lusted after an iPhone, but I did not buy one. And then the next year came along, they announced the iPhone 3G. And at that time, they also announced the iPod Touch. Or was that, no, the iPod Touch second gen. So they had already had the original iPod Touch out. So when the second gen iPod was announced, I was like, oh, dang. Like, well, maybe now I can just buy an iPod Touch and not have to worry about a contract or a cellular or any of that stuff. They're still kind of pricey. But so I kind of like mulled it over for a couple of months. And this is when I first discovered Touch Arcade and stuff like that. And this is not long after the actual App Store launched in July of 2008. And so I'm seeing all the launch games like the Monkey Ball and the Crash Bandicoot Racing and all this stuff. And I'm like, dang, those look cool. I was heavy into like Nintendo DS at the time and stuff. And so, I was just like, man, another cool little game system.
Oh shit, this game is just free now? I'm going to download this right now.
Yeah, it's just free.
It used to be like 10 or 12 bucks, right?
The catch to it being free is it's 1.6 gigs.
Oh, that's
so,
fine.
Anyway. But I didn't get, I wasn't an original iPhone owner. It took me a little over a year to get into iOS stuff, but I did so with my second gen Touch. And one of the main draws for me was this Texas Hold'em game that I saw because it looked really nice. I was really heavy into playing Hold'em with my friends at the time. We'd get together almost every weekend and play.
Yeah, this
and
hit.
We all watched the World Series.
Exactly. It hit like at the really good time where, like, for whatever reason, World Series of Poker was like on normal network TV. People were so amped up for it.
Yeah, so this was actually one of the big draw games for me. This and then Touch Grind. Touch Arcade was previewing it at the time. It hadn't come out yet, but Touch Grind was like another, that I think was the one that sealed the deal. I was like, I need this little skateboard game. So
it's interesting to think that like they didn't throw Texas Hold'em into like Apple Arcade. That would be kind of neat, right? To have this be like, oh yeah, shit, remember Texas Hold'em? That's cool. It's an Apple Arcade.
Well, so the funny thing about that, so this silly Texas Hold'em game, which to be honest, isn't even that great of a Hold'em game because AI's never been very good or whatever, but it's very playable and it's nice. You can play through hands really quickly and stuff like that. So I played the crap out of this thing on my first iPod Touch and probably put hundreds of hours in on it. It was like my go-to break game at work and whatever. And so, it was kind of funny that a couple years later, actually, several years later, it got removed from the App Store and has just been dead ever since. And so they resurrected it they updated it with like high-resolution graphics. Not a whole lot else has changed. It's really the same game that it was before. But they re-released it for free to celebrate the 10th anniversary of the App Store, which was last year. So I thought that was kind of funny, too, that it's a year later celebration release. But anyway... the funny thing about this game is you could play it in portrait or landscape. Portrait mode, it tries to be like this first-person experience with these animated avatars, like full-motion video animation.
Yeah, it reminds me of like old-school CD-ROM style games.
Totally,
like,
they're like the funniest animations. And like the gimmick is supposed to be like, oh, you can watch the people you're playing and they'll have tells, but you got to pay attention to their animations and see how they react and blah, 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 blah. And it's all very like cheesy stuff where it's like, oh, a guy shifted his eyes. He's
bluffing. Oh, yeah.
Whatever. So
a woman at my table just gave these like extremely obvious side eyes.
Yeah, totally. Like, it's actually kind of charming and like just like you said, like a early 90s CD-ROM game style. But you know, it's sort of just a novelty. The games take way too long if you play it that way. So I actually always played it in landscape, which is like a really simple overhead view or whatever. And it's actually a very fun game. So yeah, it's a bit of Apple history here. This was their first ever
Do you
and
remember
only
if it's the
first
same
game.
actors that were in the original one?
All the same people. The update note said there's new challengers or something like that. So there might be extra ones that I haven't noticed, but like the dealer's the same. Most of the people I've come across are the same. So they must have just filmed all that stuff in higher resolution and re-released it that way or whatever. But
Wow, this is kind of blowing my
another
mind
funny
right
thing
now.
is like level selection used to be cover flow. Remember how big a deal
Oh
cover
yeah,
flow
cover flow.
was? Like, you know, and so they got rid of all that, and I guess like I don't know. I guess the functionality of cover flow just doesn't even exist anymore because now it's just like a dumb list of icons. But I was
Cover
kind of like, hey,
flow.
sort of missed that cover flow. It's the only time I ever used it was in this game.
Yeah,
So
if you don't know what that is, it was like the interface of like the video iPods basically,
yeah.
right?
Yeah, you could like basically scroll through your CD artwork in like a really fancy, cool way that was not at all practical, but it looked neat, which I don't know, it's kind of cool. But so anyway, yeah, Texas Hold'em. It's free. If you got the space on your device, it's worth downloading. It's a fun poker game. It's not like, you know, the
Yikes.
expert level or anything like that. Although they
Yeah.
did say they improved the AI and the challenge, so I haven't dove deep enough to realize if that's true or not. But back in the day, you could definitely like it was not a very hard game,
I
but
just
it
got
was good with pastime. So,
dumpstered by a cowboy man, bandit poker player guy.
yeah, it's good just for the full motion video stuff is a kick. So,
Yeah, this is crazy.
anyway, that was a very surprising thing from this week. So happy 11th anniversary App Store, I guess.
Yeah, that's cool. I'm gonna spend more time with this. Well,
Yeah,
on
it's fun.
more potentially bummer news, depending on how you feel about free-to-play stuff, the Dr. Mario thing came out.
Yeah, I guess we talked about this last week. This Dr. Mario World launched this week. It actually came out a day early than planned, and it was up for pre-order. So a lot of people kind of woke up to it being just magically on their device or whatever. Yeah, I don't have a lot of good things to say about this, and so far, that seems to be the consensus, and I don't chalk it up to just being people being like, "Oh, a free-to-play game, it sucks." Like, I think people actually have tried it and been like, "Yeah, this is not good." I feel like it's okay. It's not terrible. We've talked about before, like neither of us really liked Dr. Mario in the first place. Just the base mechanics of it just wasn't my jam as a puzzle game back in the day.
Yeah.
So I wasn't super excited about like a rebooted version or anything like that. And I still feel the same. I've played through some of the early levels on this, and it's okay. I don't really like in this game. So in the original game, you know, Mario would pop some pills into the playfield, and they'd fall down Tetris style, and you'd have
Yeah, this they
to
fall
move
out.
them left or right or rotate them or whatever, like a Tetris block. In this game, things are backwards. Things move upwards, and you actually drag the pieces into the playfield with your finger from the bottom, and then let them go, and they travel upwards on their own. Or you can, you know, drag them faster to where they need to go or whatever. I don't like this. I feel it's really imprecise. I feel like you block the pill with your finger to where you're not always sure you're putting it in the exact right spot or whatever. I'm just not a fan of this control mechanism. I feel like it's probably the right move for a touchscreen, but you know, I can't imagine. We've had Tetris versions over the years that had like virtual D-pads and stuff like that, and it's never been great. Nobody's really cracked the Tetris virtual controlling problem. But yeah, so I'm not really in love with the controls in this either. But I mean, it works okay. You kind of get used to it or whatever. But I'm still not a huge fan of the mechanics. And so for me, this is kind of just a big meh. I love that it's got the Nintendo polish, right? Like I love the graphics. I love the music and stuff like that. I was like, had the
Dude.
music stuck in my head and I wasn't even mad about it. But
So I'm playing this fucking poker game while we're talking about this. I just finished downloading. The
sure.
first hand of my game, there's three people, including me, on the table that have gone all in
Yeah.
without even seeing the flop.
There's that AI that I love so much.
What the
Yeah.
fuck? I was
So
like, yeah,
hopefully you go
sure, let's do
bust on your
this.
very first hand. Let us know how it turns out.
All right, well, let's anyway.
So yeah, so Dr. Mario World, I'm not a big fan of it. I haven't really seen too many people like it, but I feel like For, I don't know, maybe the mainstream that this is aimed at. What happened?
Thanks for
That
playing.
movie.
Come back soon.
Yeah, you got smoked. Maybe the mainstream that this is kind of aimed at will be more into this. I don't know. I
Yeah.
mean, it's a really polished game and stuff like that. But the funny thing was Sean's impressions on Twitter was like, "Oh, this Dr. Mario game is terrible," blah blah blah. And then like a couple hours later, is like, okay, so just to add to that, like the game's terrible, but the PvP is actually pretty fun, so
Yeah.
maybe that's redeeming. I haven't tried that myself, but it does have direct head-to-head PvP, so I could actually, maybe that would be fun. But other than that, just playing through the story levels and stuff like that hasn't been blowing my skirt up all that much. But it's
Yeah,
free; you can download and try it yourself.
it's been interesting reading the reactions surrounding this game because it's like people that are it's like so fucking typical of this type of puzzle game in that like I feel like if I took the time and like compiled a bunch of reactions and like just removed the title of the game and were like, okay, what game is this people are complaining about? Like there would be 10 million different answers because it's like all to do with like the energy system and lives and all this stuff. And it seems like a lot of the people complaining like haven't played the game
Oh, I'm
and are like
sure.
arguing with people that have played the game and are like, yeah, you know, it's like yeah, sometimes you like really lose quick and it kind of sucks, but like it's really not a problem. And then like the people that are pissed are like arguing back with them. They're like, oh, that you must not be playing it. Like surely that can't be the case. And
There's no
I
way you're
was,
enjoying this thing that I personally hate.
yeah.
No, I get it. I feel like that's like the story of like Candy Crush and stuff like that, where people are like, "Oh, you don't actually like Candy Crush. You know, they just manipulated you into liking it," or some shit like that, where it's like, "No, I love Candy Crush. I play it all the time. It's fine. Yeah, it's got some dumb free-to-play stuff in it, but it doesn't bother me, so whatever." And people can't like understand that that's a thing. And I feel like it's gonna be the same with this game, where people are like, "I don't really understand the hate. I'm playing some Mario, Dr. Mario, and it's fun, and I get to play people in it, and you know, whatever." So if you like this game, awesome. Like, I'm happy for people
I
like
think
games.
a lot of people like come up with these kind of like imaginary pinch points in their head of like game like you know a level that's unintentionally difficult or like intentionally extra difficult to get you to spend money and like I don't know like it just these are skill-based puzzle games you know and like I guess you can believe the conspiracy theory that like you know they're giving you bad RNG to lose so you start spending money but like in actuality like the business of free-to-play is keeping people playing. Like if you hit a fuck it point early in the game and you churn out, like that's really bad. So it like makes no sense for them to like put a like intentionally ultra difficult level like an hour into playing the game. Because they want you to play this game every day for the rest of the year, you know, and
Rest of your
the
life.
rest of your
Yeah, no,
yeah.
I agree though. That's true.
So I don't know.
So
I
yeah, there's
definitely would recommend people give it a try though. I mean
for
like
sure.
it's free. It's Dr. Mario. Like maybe like my problem is like I like we were saying like I never really liked the Dr. Mario format that much, but I'm like I've played so much of it just over the years, you know, with random like NES Classic and like other random bullshit like that, that it's kind of really weird trying to like rewire my brain to like play the game upside down. So I feel like I do worse than I would other because like in actuality it kind of
It
like
is
plays
weird.
more like a you almost have to think of it as like a bubble popper that has like a strange like block dragging mechanic instead of like an aiming and shooting thing,
Yeah, no, that's a good point.
which
It
is
is
just
very much like that.
I don't know, it's just weird.
Another thing I just thought of that bummed me out about my experience with this game is that it takes a long time to like load. Like, for one, it needs like internet connection, and sometimes that takes a while. But also, like, level transitions or just a level starting up feels like it takes it longer than it should. And that's always kind of a turnoff to me, where if you have enough time to be like, "This is taking too long," then that's taking too long. You know what I mean? So I'm a patient person, but when you play a game, especially one that has a lot of levels, I don't know, stuff like that adds up, and it's just not as great of an experience. So
Yeah, that's
I'm gonna keep
been.
playing through it though. I'll admit I want to make my way through at least the first few worlds to kind of see if things change.
Yeah.
But you know, whatever.
That's been the case with like a lot of these Nintendo free-to-play games is that like it feels like they always just have like really weird like load screens and like things taking like way longer than they should and it's I
That to
don't know.
me That to me screams this game was primarily developed by DNA or by Line or whatever. You know what I mean? They feel like those companies' games that have like a lot of that analytical online connection stuff going on in the background. Where I never really felt like a Nintendo developed game in house, I feel like wouldn't have that sort of stuff. But maybe I'm just being stupid.
Yeah, it's always bonkers to me when you've got like, you know, like an iPhone 10 or an iPhone 10s or something like that, that can play like a game like Grid Autosport at like borderline photorealistic settings.
Yeah.
And then you've got like a game like Dr. Mario World that like has absurd load times between levels.
I agree.
I don't get it. Well, let's hear about, what is it, Infectionator 3
this week? No, you're like a month behind.
Oh, yeah.
So, as I said at the beginning, this episode is sponsored by Armor Games and their new release, Void Tyrant.
Oh, Void Tyrant.
So here's the ad for that. Void Tyrant is a roguelike deck-building adventure with the hit-or-stand mechanics of blackjack. It's easy to pick up and learn, but challenging to master. Battle your way across the galaxy armed with only a deck of unique cards, a bit of strategy, and the powerful loot you find along the way. In this single-player adventure, you'll uncover hundreds of cards, fight or befriend aliens, and grow increasingly more powerful as you explore planetary dungeons in an attempt to find the Six Eyes of Kronos. Mm. Download it for free on the App Store today.
Mm.
And you should do that.
Veteran
is good.
I recommend that. I was reading the Touch Arcade thread on it. People seem to dig it.
Yeah, it's really good. And I think I mentioned last week maybe that like I had wished the developer was kind of being more communicative with update plans and stuff like that, because there's definitely some balance issues with it or whatever. And apparently that's the case. They've already released an update, I think, in the last couple of days.
Oh,
and
cool.
I think that it will be getting smoothed over. So that's good to know. But even as is, awesome game.
Yeah, everything Armor Games makes is good. I can't believe like Soda Dungeon is still going as well as it. Like, they're still updating that game.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I may know something that's happening in the realm of that, but we'll talk about that maybe some other time.
All right.
So moving along. So this was another kind of interesting story. Flashback, the 90s adventure game / platformer that had the rotoscoped animation that looks awesome, has great graphics, whatever, is coming to iOS and Android, I think. Sometime this summer, and I saw that, and I was like, wait a minute, wasn't
this was released before
on iPhone already? And lo and behold, yes, back in like 2010 or 2011, Flashback was released on iPhone. So, May of 2009.
Yeah,
that's
holy
how
shit.
Far back. Over 10 years ago,
ancient
Flashback
history.
Was on. Yeah. So it's interesting to go back and read. I think you wrote the story about it. Because it was very much like back in those days, like you could release a port of something in like a really janky sort of weird emulator.
Oh, and God, like, I remember the controls of this. This is like extreme jank.
People were still kind of figuring out how to do things like virtual controls and stuff like that. And so this was just like a really straight port of the original DOS or Amiga version or whatever. But with this really weird panel of virtual buttons on the left.
Yeah,
and
for
then
your
like
actions.
A virtual joystick sort of thing to move right in the middle of the screen. And so that was kind of your chief complaint. I remember trying to play this back in the day too, and it's very awkward. But
I think I've owned this game on like three different platforms, and I still have not like gotten any more than like
so
the first five screens in the game, maybe.
Yeah, it's very hard. So I guess maybe people just want to forget that this port exists or whatever, but this is kind of being billed as... like a brand new, never happened before thing, Flashback coming to mobile. But it is being remastered this time around by the original creator, Paul Quisset. I don't know if that's how you pronounce that. It's a French name. But he was the original designer back in 92 when the game released. And he has personally remastered this. This is actually based on a version that was released on the Switch and on consoles last year. And it has, like, a couple graphical filters. So you know, if you don't want the jagged lines of the original version, you can smooth them out if you're a monster.
I love this part from the original article. Is one curious thing I noticed about the iPhone port is while the file size of the download of the App Store is only 1.1 megabytes, as you download another 3 megabytes the first time you launch the game, so be aware of that.
That is so adorable. 3 extra megabytes. Oh, my gosh. So that's life as an iPhone gamer 10 years ago.
What was crazy about this game, I remember when it launched on Genesis or whatever, they made a really big deal about how it was, like, the biggest cartridge that's ever been released because it's got the best, like, cinematic animation graphics and, like, all this crazy stuff. And I had to have it, and, of course, it was, like, way too difficult for 10-year-old Eli or whoever I was at the time. But,
So it's funny. The mailman just got here. If you can hear my dog going crazy. This is going to be a remastered version. It'll have some graphical filters for those that want them. And then it will also have a rewind function, which I feel like is a blessing for a game like this. Because this is a game where you can just screw up at any moment doing pretty much anything. So a rewind function is pretty nice.
There's a lot of, like, super bullshitty deaths too in this game because I remember, like, one of the first screens, if you just, like, walk from, like, left to right, a snake just kills you.
Absolutely. This is a very early 90s, like, PC game,
right? Or is that another game that's just like this?
There's, like, Another World was
that's what I'm thinking. I think Another World is the first screen has a snake that just kills you.
And then these are also kind of similar to Prince of Persia or whatever, just in the very difficult platforming-ish games or whatever. If you played
mind-blowing this game, like, mind-blowing back in the day, though. Like, just how many frames of animation?
Is the animation technique is... So before there was, like, motion capture, or maybe, you know, before games were using it, they had rotoscoping, which is more or less you would film something... And then you would go over all the frames of animation and trace them into being, a drawing and put them in a computer or whatever. So you're, like, tracing over actual animation. And so it had a really realistic look to it. And that's what they used in this. And just the color palette and stuff like that, it's kind of like a fuzzy pastel look to it or whatever. The animations and the art style and stuff like that are the types of things that totally stand the test of time.
I
love good pixel art and stuff too, and a lot of old pixel art games still look great to me. But something like this, I feel like, will always look cool no matter how advanced graphics get or whatever, as opposed to, like, a 1995 3D game or, you know, even Mario 64 or something like that, which those don't hold up as well to time at all. So I love when their games use art styles like this that just kind of stand the test of time.
How about that Virtua Racing that just got released on the Switch? Did you buy that yet?
Oh, I love it so much. It's so good.
Did you buy it? Is it good?
Oh, it's super fun.
Because that game, it seems like the prime example of, like, does not stand up over time. Because it's like, the graphics are like 13 polygons on screen at once.
Yeah. It's funny because, so here's the thing with the remake. And I read a big article about it and stuff like that. Because it's M2 did it, and they're famous for doing, like, the Sega Ages ports and a ton of other emulator stuff. They're kind of like the retro porting masters. But anyway, they did the port for this, and it was, like, a real big, almost, like, written from scratch remake of the game. Because the draw distances are way better, so you're not getting stuff popping in like you would in the arcade original. And I don't think they upped the polygon count, but everything's higher resolution. But the biggest thing for me is everything runs at solid 60 frames a second. And that makes a huge difference. So when you're actually playing the Sega Ages version, it looks really, really good in motion. And it's still damn fun. So, yeah, that's probably one of my favorite. I get suckered into buying these old re-release games all the time because I'm like, oh, I love that game when I was a kid. And you play it, and you're like, this game isn't good anymore.
This game sucks.
I was sort of nervous because I've done that a million times, but I actually think Virtua Racing still holds up super well. So
All right. Anyway. I will consider purchasing it.
Yeah, you should check it out. I wish I had a demo or something like that, but
yeah. Anyway, Flashback seems worth getting excited for. It's a cool game. Yeah. Historic, I would say, even.
Historic, yes. That should be coming sometime this summer. No release date yet. So anyway. This was, I just saw this, and I'm a big fan of Neutronized, the developer Neutronized, who has done Super Cat Tales and Slime Pizza and a bunch of stuff with Nitrome, and, tons of games that you would know and love over the years.
I would almost describe like their games as like the Nitrome art style. Like, I wonder where that came much. In.
And this is this is just one guy. So he did a lot of partnerships with Nitrome, but I don't know if he ever worked for them or if just like a contractual basis sort of thing. But he does a lot of stuff mostly on his own now. Like Super Cat Tales 2 was released all on his own. The first game was a partnership with FDG or whatever. So, but anyway, his new game is called Yokai Dungeon. And it is like a puzzle-y dungeon crawler based on the yokai, like from the Yokai Watch series or whatever. Basically, the Japanese folklore, the yokai are kind of these little creatures that can be either, you know, evil or mostly just mischievous or whatever. And the story kind of goes that, like, whenever anything sort of, like, weird or unexplainable happens, it's because of these yokai coming in and doing something like you lost your keys or, you know, something like that. So, yeah. Anyway... There's all sorts of characters over the centuries that yokai have been a thing. Lots of them are animal-based, and a lot of them are kind of like spirit-based and stuff like that. And so he's kind of taking that theme and running with it by having a bunch of playable characters in this that are kind of based on animals and stuff. And he actually solicited some, you know, character requests from his fans, like what kind of characters we'd like to see, and has implemented a bunch of them. Like, there's a fox character, and I think there's two penguin ones because he couldn't decide, you know, which one he liked better and stuff like that. So the different characters in the game will have different stats in terms of, like, some have more health but faster speed, and some have, you know, better defense or whatever. Pretty basic stuff, but still enough to make them hopefully play different from one another. And then the actual game itself is kind of like a, I want to call it kind of like a Bomberman, because you'll have these randomly generated dungeon layouts, and there will be enemies kind of just marching around, and you can kick blocks at them, and you want to try and squish them with the blocks. So it's kind of like you'd be dropping bombs, hoping to explode them in Bomberman, but instead you're trying to get them in a position where you can kick a block at them and kill them. Hmm. So that's kind of the main mechanic here, but looks super good. It's... can't remember if it was up for pre-order or when it was coming out. I think he's just it was feature complete and submitted to Apple. So yeah, once it gets approved, he's going to decide the release date and stuff like that. But shouldn't be too long. And Neutronize does great stuff. I'm very much looking forward to Yokai Dungeon. So definitely check out the trailer if you haven't watched it yet.
Hell yeah.
Speaking of games with a lot of levels, like we were with Dr. Mario a few minutes ago, Candy Crush Saga, the original Candy Crush, has just released its 5,000th level.
That's insane. You realize you could probably download this game and, like, just never play anything else for the rest of your life and, like, never run out of content?
Absolutely. I mean, absolutely. And we used to, I remember back in the day, I'm talking years ago, we would, like, laugh about, you know, you'd be out and about, like, I think your barber or something like that, or maybe your mom's hairdresser or some weird thing like that where they were like, oh, I'm on, like, level 700 and something of Candy Crush or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, people are always being like, oh, I'm on level 400. Oh, I'm on level 900. Oh, I'm in the thousands or whatever, which seems absurd anyway. Just hundreds of levels seem pretty crazy. So now they're at 5,000. So I would like to know who's at 5,000. Anybody?
I don't know.
Probably,
like,
not.
That's what's so crazy about that. And but another thing I'd like to know is, like, how difficult are these, like, is, like, level, you know, 4,722? Because, like, kind of stopped playing that game because it was, like, getting so unbelievably difficult.
Well, I also don't think you can have a balanced difficulty progression through 5,000 levels. You know what I mean? Because
I wonder if they redid them then. Because, like, when I quit playing, it was like, man, you had these blocks that were, like, covered in licorice and then covered in, like, chocolate. And, like, you had to match stuff up against them, like, two or three times before you could even, like, get the block that you have to clear.
Well, that's been a problem with a lot of puzzle games before that release, like, extra levels as DLC or something like that, where it's like, okay, I made the base game, it was balanced from beginning to end to get increasingly difficult, and now I've released these new levels. You don't necessarily want to start off with, like, the end of the first game's hardness and go harder.
Right.
So you kind of have to be like, well, the first half of these new levels are kind of like easy to medium again, and then it goes to hard. You have to it's almost like releasing a second game or something. So it's a game like this where they've just constantly been releasing literally thousands of levels. How often do you have to go back and rebalance, or do they just not worry about it?
Makes me
feel like with this many levels, there's not, like, a level designer. They have to have, like, some algorithm that spits out these levels for them or something. But I don't know, maybe I'm wrong. But yeah, 5,000 is just an absurd number of levels.
Well, I mean, think of how long the game's been out, though. I mean, it's been out
since 2012.
So, like, yeah. I don't know, 5,000 levels over that many years doesn't seem like that crazy to do them
it's
by
true.
Hand.
That's fair. Yeah.
I don't know, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot of levels. And I don't believe this is still going on now because it was supposed to be a 24-hour thing. But because not everyone's probably at level 5,000, they actually were letting people go through and play level 5,000 as long as you were at least level 10 character-wise or profile-wise.
Oh, really?
And then you could earn some.
So this is
cool
the original
stuff.
Candy Crush, right? Not Soda.
Original
or...
Candy Crush Saga. Well, there actually, you know, I didn't know this before. There is an original Candy Crush, just Candy Crush, which was the Facebook game.
Yeah.
And so Candy Crush Saga is actually a sequel to Candy Crush. And then there's Candy Crush Soda. Whatever Candy Crush dessert.
Here's another super crazy thing that not a lot of people know about is that when Candy Crush first launched, you could buy permanent upgrades.
Oh, damn, really?
Yeah, and I'm always like curious if you had bought those when Candy Crush like first was new on the iPhone, like if they still exist in the game.
That's a good question. I don't know.
Or what?
Yeah.
Because like the rejiggering for like the consumable power up thing was. Like took place a little bit after it launched. Before that, they were like permanent things you bought.
Damn, that's crazy. So there's a super old school Candy Crush player that's just like maxed out with all these permanent upgrades.
Maybe
that's
I don't know.
Maybe they're on level 5,000.
That would be interesting to try to figure out like what happened with that. So I don't know. That's cool though.
Anyway, I thought it was a cool enough story to talk about because man, how many levels or how many games out there have 5,000 levels? Not many.
Okay.
So speaking of resurrecting old iPhone games, eBoy Fix Picks got updated this week, which is like almost more out of the blue than Apple's Texas Hold'em to me. Back in 2010, this game released. And at that time, iPhones were still kind of new. There was still like a lot of, I don't want to call it gimmicky stuff, but, you know, stuff that was based around like the unique features of an iPhone, like touchscreen stuff or accelerometer stuff or whatever. And so this was a game that was kind of a collaboration between a game studio called Delicious Toys and then this sort of like artist collaborative called eBoy that does like pixel art and stuff like that. So what they devised was this sort of puzzle game where you are given a bunch of pixel art scenes that are kind of like separated and screwed up in some way. And then you tilt your phone around until you align up all of the separated pieces to make one cohesive picture. And I say in the article that I'm doing a bad job of explaining it because it's hard to explain.
So I'm on level 107 right now in Candy Crush. I'm on level 107 in Candy Crush.
Oh, that's weak sauce.
Seriously.
So yeah, if you watch the trailer though, you instantly understand what I mean. It's like, it's kind of like the parallax scrolling like wallpaper feature in your iPhones nowadays or whatever. You kind of tilt your phone around and the different sections of the picture will kind of come together and there's a certain point where they all align and that's how you solve
it. This game was cool. I remember this now after watching the trailer.
Yeah. So anyway, this game came out in 2010. I think it had like 100 levels or something like that. And it was pretty popular and it did. They added a bunch of levels post-release. So I think ultimately it has 180, something like that. So anyway, I don't think it ever got pulled off the App Store, but it got woefully outdated. It hadn't been updated since 2013. So this was just a surprise release. They call it the eBoy Fix Picks expanded version. And what they mean by that is they literally expanded the scenes because the iPhone screens of back then were much smaller than they are now. So not only does it take advantage of like full screen iPhone 10s and iPad Pros, but the scenes are actually larger. They didn't just like zoom in or something like that. You know what I mean? So that's pretty cool. So you actually do get an expanded view and expanded levels. And the other big change is that this game is now free and you can play through the first 30 levels. And if you like it, you unlock the rest for, I think, $1.99 or something like that. And that's an extra 150 levels. So totally worth downloading. This is like a kind of an obscure lost iPhone game that's really unique and interesting. It's hard to call it a game. It's kind of like a toy in a lot of ways, but it's still really neat, especially if you like pixel art. So you can download it and try it out for free if you didn't know what it was back in the day. Definitely worth checking out the new expanded version. So that was kind of a happy surprise update for me this week. But anyway, so, eBoy Fix Picks, go check it out.
So I think they must have changed something with the difficulty in Candy Crush because, like, it just crashed. I specifically remember being stuck on that level for weeks, and that's why I eventually said fuck Candy Crush. Yeah, I matched like three things, and just like there's so many things cascading down that like the level basically like was beating itself to the point that it was so insane the game just crashed.
Yeah. I feel like they have to do sort of like a rebalancing of all the levels at certain points when you start releasing so many new levels, because yeah, that would just be sucky to be stuck on a early level like that when there's 4,900 more to go or whatever.
Yeah.
So anyway, Square Enix this week released another iPhone 10 screen size update, this time for Dragon Quest V. I want to say, gosh, I don't think 4 has it, and I don't think 6 has it, but 1 and 2 and 3 and 8 definitely all have iPhone 10 updates because I've played them. And so 5, I think, is kind of the fan one of the fan favorites. So it's nice to see them giving it a full screen update. But interesting thing about this.
Not to keep breaking in with Candy Crush news, but like, so I just reloaded the game, and like on the first, like going into the level, like the first thing I've got is like a blinking, like, oh, match these to get a 5.
Oh, really?
Seems weird. Anyway, continue. Sorry.
Yeah. Dragon Quest V now updated for the iPhone 10 and I assume iPad Pro. But what was interesting about this is it's a welcome update for a good game. These games are, if you didn't know, the Dragon Quest iPhone ports all play in portrait mode and you can play them with one hand. And that ticks a lot of people off, but I think it makes a lot more people actually happy. I'm one of those people. I think these games are played super well one-handed. And Dragon Quest VIII especially is a really fun.
Yeah, I always thought it was really cool that these played like one-handed like that.
You know, you don't need. I mean, it's the perfect sort of thing. Like you can move around. You're doing a lot of talking. The battles are turn-based. You know what I mean? Like there's not a whole lot of stuff that you need both hands at the ready for. You know what I mean? So it's like a really cool way. And a lot of them are really long games with, you know, lots of grindy parts or maybe lots of like dialogue or story stuff happening or whatever. I just feel like it's a really good way to pass the time that's mm-hmm. not like a mindless puzzle game or something like that. It's like a full RPG. You can just play with one hand. It's kind of cool. So anyway, but looking into this, I was like, oh, cool. I'm curious, what other games is Square Enix updating with iPhone 10 support? And I did not realize that Hitman Go and Lara Croft Go and Deus Ex Go all got iPhone 10 updates last December, I think. So, those are all games that I think at one point I had in my I wish they'd get updated for the iPhone 10 folder, but they're all so large that I think I eventually had to delete them.
Yeah.
But so that was kind of cool. I think I'm going to go re-download those and replay through them because they're all pretty great, although Lara Croft is the best. But
Apple's made it really hard to keep track of like game updates these days, it seems like.
I know. I've realized now the offloading apps thing is a nice way to do it because like all the Rockstar games, for instance. Mm. But the only problem with that is that you don't get an update alert, even if it's offloaded and you have the app icon on your phone still. It won't tell you there's an update. So it's like, I don't even know really what the point is. But for me, at least, it's at least a way to keep track of games that I like that I sometimes have to get rid of for space reasons.
Yeah.
That I might not remember to go re-download later or whatever. I wish that Apple had a thing that was like, hey, you have a bunch of offloaded games. They got updates too, like some sort of alternate tab in the App Store or something about updates for offloaded games. That would be brilliant. But anyway, so yeah, Dragon Quest V, iPhone 10 update. Go check it out and check out the other Dragon Quests too while you're at it.
Hell yeah! Do you remember if these have like cheat modes in them?
I don't think so, unless there was like stuff you can do in the originals that still work in the iPhone versions. Because
that's
sure.
What been kind of like bumming me out about the last weekend a friend of mine was like just oozing about how great the Final Fantasy 9 port is on the Switch. Mm-hmm. So I was like, all right, I'll download this. Like, sure, I never played that game. Like, it was like came out like at the very end of the PlayStation life cycle, and I think I was playing a PlayStation 2 by the time I was like thinking about playing that.
Right. Yeah, a lot of people.
I wish that they would not bundle these games like loaded with all sorts of cheats and stuff.
Yeah, I know.
or I mean, like even make it so it's like I don't care if you want to have the cheats in there, but like make it harder to access them. Like maybe right. have like, you know, a menu where you like have to go turn them on, or like maybe like a like just a free DLC thing you have to get from the eShop to kind of like trigger them or something. Because like,
yeah,
I don't. It sucks to be like, oh, I accidentally hit pause and like a trigger button, and now I have 20 million gold and all my stats yeah. are level 99 and
ruin the game for yourself.
All this other stuff. Yeah. So.
Yeah. No, I agree. But I also, man, there's so many old games that I just want to play through and enjoy and not necessarily be challenged by or anything like
yeah,
that.
That's fair
so it's
too.
Kind of fun to cheat your way through just to experience it. But yeah, a lot of that can just wreck a game too. Like, so one of my things I'm doing right now is for my birthday month, Nintendo gives you like a discount for certain games.
Really?
30% off a certain selection of games. I think we talked about this on the podcast before. And the month was running out, and I was like, shit, I got to pick one. But there wasn't anything like super appealing. There is no Switch games. There was some Wii U games and some 3DS games. And from the 3DS pile, the only game I really was interested in was the Metroid remake, the Metroid 2 remake. And so that was the game I ended up playing. But I was kind of like, man, it'd be fun to play through the original Metroid again and then maybe play through the Game Boy version, because I have a ROM-hacked, colorized version of it that I've been meaning to play. And then play through the Samus Returns remake just for fun to kind of brush up on my Metroid or whatever. So I started playing the original Metroid, and that's one of those games that's tough to get into.
The NES like Metroid?
NES Metroid.
Yeah.
It's It's weird because it's I picked it up, I was playing through it, and I was like, man, this is hard. You have no direction on where to go. I don't really feel like looking up a walkthrough. I kind of just want to explore, but at the same time, it takes an hour to climb up this one, you know, tunnel to get to a door even, and then that door leads to who knows where. But it could take you like 15 minutes to work through a series of rooms to end up at a door that you can't open, and then you have to go back. And health is like very limited supply unless you want to sit there and spam kill enemies. And well, so it's just like kind of just, it's borderline frustrating.
I played through that on the NES Classic, and like the first thing I did was like, I'm going to print out a map, and that's going to be the only cheat I use on this. And like that made the difference, because it was like
a map. Maybe I'd be down to look up a map. But so what I did instead is I actually looked up if there was cheat codes, which there are. And so I did one that was like, hey, start out the game with like every weapon unlocked and every item and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, cool, now I'll just play through it, whatever. But man, it was not fun that way. And so I, again, played it for a little bit and was like, I'm not having fun. Maybe I should just skip the original Metroid. Maybe that time has come and gone in my life, blah, blah, blah. And
that's
whatever.
Surprising. Maybe I had a really good time playing through that on the NES Classic.
Well, so a week passes, and I go and I fired up my Switch for something, and that was the last thing I had played. So I turned on the Switch, and it goes right to where I was. And I was like, oh, yeah, I was playing this. And I was like, well, let me give it another shot. And so I started playing through. I started being smarter about battling enemies. I started making sure I always had, you know, enough health and stuff like that. And so, yeah, for whatever, kind of like you and Dead Cells, it just clicked with me again where I was like, damn, this is really fun.
Yeah.
And I made, I don't know how far, but I mean, I played it for like a good hour and feel like I made some serious progress and was like, okay, I'm into this now. I'm going to beat this for sure now. And for whatever the reason, like that second go around was more enjoyable. And I'm not using any cheats or anything like that, just a stock playthrough. But yeah, it's just kind of funny that way. So
that game has like one of the best like end sequences. Like after, did you beat it?
I beat it when I was a kid.
Or like, you know, like after you beat like Mother Brain and you need to do like the escape thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Like that like blew my mind as a kid. Cause like usually it's like you beat the end boss and like the credits roll. And I just was like, I remember being like, holy shit, like it keeps going.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So I don't know. I'm going to play through that and we'll see. And then I now want to replay Metroid Zero Mission 2.
That game was really good.
Yeah, it's a good one. So anyway, Minecraft Earth. Closed beta is about to begin, and they're taking signups on their website, and they kind of explained, they released a new video about Minecraft Earth that kind of explains how the beta is going to work, who they're going to be choosing. It's going to mostly be based on who's in what location and stuff like that. I think they're really interested in doing some server testing, which is probably a good thing.
Yeah,
but anyway, you can head over to their website and sign up and maybe get chosen as a beta tester for Minecraft Earth.
One of the lucky few.
Yeah, we'll see. I think it looks, I still think this looks cool.
Yeah,
so
I think it,
we'll see.
I don't know. Like, it seems cool. I'll definitely download it and play it for 10 minutes.
A minute. I'm curious what's making my dog go nuts right now. So anyway, final story I had to talk about this week was this silly little outfit called Game Club has added Space Miner Blast to their early access program. You may recall that the original Space Miner, which was the Touch Arcade iPhone game of the year 2010, and is just one of the best mobile games ever, really. I mean, it's just awesome. You guys picked up that Space Miner and released that like a month and a half ago, something like that,
Something like that, yeah.
And so Space Miner Blast was actually like a spin-off game that the original developer, Venon Entertainment, released about 7 months after the original game. And so Space Miner, the original, is like a top-down asteroids type of game where you're shooting and fighting enemies and also mining for ore and going back and buying new upgrades and turning your ore in for money and getting more upgrades and getting new ship parts and, you know, really whatever. Good. It's like this really layered RPG mechanics layered on top of this top-down space shooter, and it just works awesome. With a lot of funny storyline woven in or whatever. So Space Miner Blast is sort of like that without all of the complex RPG stuff layered on top. Like, there's an upgrade system, but it's real simplistic, and the game is really more focused on like a high score, more like a regular Asteroids game where you're just trying to go as long as possible and whatever. So it's kind of like an arcadey spin-off game. And at the time, this was still when free-to-play was somewhat new. In the fall of 2010, this was released as a free game with ads.
Yeah, it was like an advert game almost. Like it was a free game, but it also was like existed to kind of like tease you into buying Space Miner, I think was like the primary goal of its existence.
Yeah, I think it served as like a light version without being a light version. It was like, hey, this is what the gameplay's like. If you want this plus story plus crazy progression, go buy the full game.
Right.
But also, this is a really good game in its own right. Like, this could have lived as like a separate mode in the original Space Miner, and it would have been fine, like a cool arcade mode or whatever. Mm-hmm. But instead, it's just a separate game. And so it was free with ads, and then you could buy different ships like $1 a piece.
Like the Secret of Bryce Manor Hornet tackle Hornet game, whatever that game was called.
Yeah. Hornet, not Blast, but Hornet Blast. So Space Miner Blast served as like a taste of the full Space Miner, but was also just a good arcade game on its own. And it was free. And so, this was another one that got lost along with the original that you guys have brought back. And it is the game that if you are signed up for the Early Access Program, you'll get an email about it on Monday. But if you are super cool and are part of the Game Club Discord, there's a test flight link to it right this minute. And right so you can be second. Playing Space Miner Blast this weekend.
It's really good. I'm actually kind of curious to hear from more people as they start playing this, because like, I don't know if I've just gotten like extremely good at Space Miner or if by updating this and like allowing you to see more stuff, if it like inadvertently made the game easier.
Yeah,
because I was like just ripping it up
when
I was playing this game. I was like, that's so much fun, but like I can't and I couldn't remember if the game was hard or not.
Yeah,
because it's like, it's super fun because there's this like this combo system that you keep rolling by like so there's a lot like Space Miner, you're picking up ore, and that's like the more ore you get cash, and your level ups, which is how you upgrade, are based on the cash you pick up. Mm. And you get a cash multiplier based on like, I think you have like 2 seconds or something like that to like pick up another piece of ore.
Right.
So like like the super fun part for this to me is like seeing like how high you can kind of like chain your multiplier together.
Yeah. And the thing with Space Miner is that it's modeled after Asteroids, so it has like that inertia gameplay where your ship, you know, will keep flying in a direction unless you counter thrust or whatever.
Yeah.
So you know, people who have played Asteroids know there's like a real technique to learning how to fly your ship properly using that sort of physics system or whatever. And so if you're like a real ace pilot, zipping around and collecting ore, you know, you can keep your combo going up high for high score purposes and stuff like that. So like that's really cool.
Yeah.
But yeah, Space Miner Blast, you can play it right now if they head over to discord.gg/gameclub. And then you also have links to all the other games you've released. This is your 19th game you've released in early access.
There's a lot of shit. Like, you just join the Discord, you can get like 19 really freaking awesome games for free. You just test them out. Like, all you want to hear is whether they crash, if you like them, what you...
No, I mentioned in this story, I was like, you guys have a really well-ran Discord where you have separate chats for each individual game, so you can kind of keep the chat localized to that particular game. You have this crazy system set up that if you mention bug or you mention crash or you mention these set of keywords, it'll automatically send a log to the developer of what you said. So if you're like, oh, level 37 has a bug where I can't do this, that'll just automatically get sent to the developer so they know about it.
Shockingly streamlined.
The Discord's just kick ass. You should like run a workshop on how to have a Discord.
Maybe, but next GDC.
Yeah, maybe that could be your talk. But yeah, Space Miner Blast is super good. The original Space Miner is super good. You can play both of them through Game Club for free right now. GameClub.io or go to Discord.gg/GameClub. And you know, a funny thing that I forgot about with this game because it came out so long ago. This game was being developed right during the announcement of the iPhone 4, and the iPhone 4 was the first Retina screen.
Oh, right? Okay.
And so everyone was like, oh crap, the resolutions I've been creating art for in all my games forever.
Yes.
I have to do four times, you know, the resolution now. So this game was being developed right in the middle of that. And so what happened is Venon had to go back and redo high-res art for everything for the iPhone 4 because anybody that released a game after the iPhone 4 was out was automatically going to look like shit if it didn't have Retina support.
Well, so, that and like you could basically like kiss featuring goodbye if you didn't have Retina graphics too. So
yeah, so so it was kind of funny because the way that they did that is they released the game with standard definition visuals like they had probably originally planned before the iPhone 4 was announced, and then you could choose to download. You had to buy one of the in-app purchase ships, though, which would remove ads and also allow you to download the high-res assets over the air. The reason they did that is because back then the download limit was 20 megabits.
Oh, jeez. That's...
I was like, dang, that brings me back.
That's some interesting history. I totally, forgot about.
So yeah, anyway, you could get the high-res assets. You don't have to worry about that with the Game Club version.
No.
High-res from the start. Full screen from the start. There's no in-app purchase stuff. You just choose the different chips that you want to play as and stuff like that. So yeah, just kind of a funny footnote of the world of 2010.
Yeah, but, so the other game, so last week we released The Sleeping Prince, which that's another really good game that kind of like almost seemed to like fall between the cracks because it like came out like just at the tail end of like premium being completely dead.
Yeah.
And like, it came out and it was good. Yeah. And then like they did this like kind of awkward free to play conversion and like all this stuff. So with The Sleeping Prince, we like unfree to played it, but it still has all the content of that. Cause they tried to do like a Candy Crush style thing where like they were just kind of like blasting new levels into the game constantly. So it's the same good game, but with a ridiculous amount of content. So,
well, if you weren't aware, The Sleeping Prince, I also just feel like was a slip under the radar. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if people just had never heard of it.
Yeah.
But it was a really clever mechanic where you have to control this sleeping prince, and you literally fling him through levels, and he never wakes up. And it's just this ragdoll that you're flinging through levels to collect items and open doors and whatever. It was actually, like, a really clever, you know, all the other ragdoll, like, the ragdoll phenomenon was always like kind of silly arcade games or whatever. Mm-hmm. This felt like a platformer, but with ragdoll play.
Right.
Like, it was really cool. So yeah, that was a nice hidden gem that you guys discovered there too.
Hell yeah. I think that's,
oh,
I think that's all we got for this week.
So this is probably a good place to stop. Since,
rest your voice.
Yeah. I'm probably not gonna be able to talk the rest of the weekend. So,
do you want to talk about the Switch Lite real quick before we,
Yeah. Let's do that. I'll sacrifice some extra voice for that. Cause that was a pretty big announcement.
I can explain what it is if no one's
somehow,
would be listening to this podcast, but not following like larger video game news.
Yeah.
Right. So Nintendo, there's been a lot of rumors circulating around like, oh, there's going to be a new Switch. Like it's going to be a Switch Pro, which is going to have so the way the Switch works is, when you're mobile, it plays at 720p with like a mobile performance kind of profile. So like, because it's lower resolution, like you don't get all the visual effects in some games sometimes. And if you have it docked and it can like use way more power than the batteries can just supply. It actually renders 1080p to your TV. So there's been a lot of rumblings surrounding a Switch Pro, which people think is like, okay, well, it's just going to be like that 1080p, like, you know, higher performance profile, but on the go, which I suppose could also be a possibility that they release eventually. But what they released, well, they announced this week is the Switch Lite, which is basically the Switch, but it's smaller. It's about the size of the PS Vita. It's got a little bit smaller screen. The Joy-Cons are permanently attached. It's like a all-in-one unit.
Yeah.
And it cannot dock with your TV. It only plays in portable mode.
Yeah.
Which, oh, that seems, it's $200 instead of $300.
I think that's a great entry-level point. And it's like, so are you would you consider getting one? Do you want one?
I don't know. I mean, like, my problem is, like, so I'm concerned about the joystick drift that everyone complains about.
Because you can just buy new Joy-Cons if you had to. But.
Yeah, so, like, if you're not privy to that, like, I guess the way that Nintendo, Nintendo didn't design the joysticks on the Joy-Cons. It's an off-the-shelf part that eventually fails the longer you play. Like, apparently, I don't remember if it was iFixit or another thing. It was not a matter of, like, if these fail, but more like when they fail on you based on just, like, you know, how much you play. Like, you know, if you keep it stored with, like, one of the joysticks tweaked in a you know, particular direction and stuff like that. So I don't, it makes, I would, Nintendo has to know that's a thing, right? And they have to have been okay, well, if you can't just buy a new set of Joy-Cons, like, we need to address this, right? So I'm curious about this. Like, I don't even remember the last time I plugged my Switch in my TV, though. So
I've done it exactly twice in my life.
Yeah.
Of 2.5 years of having a Switch. So, when they announced this, like, to be honest, I was hoping the Switch Pro rumors were true, because I would much rather take a beefier Switch in handheld mode that could play things at, you know, full res or full speed or whatever. But I like the idea of a slightly smaller Switch too. I think the size is fine, but I think a little smaller would be good. And so I feel like this size is right up my alley. And because I never dock mine, I don't really care about the Joy-Con things. If anything, I think it'll feel better being more solid, being one shell, one unit. And because they're not detachable, the previous left Joy-Con that needed to have four separate buttons now has a regular D-pad, which is a very necessary thing when you play in handheld mode a lot. So, I was trying to see, like, that size. The size factor, I think, is really good. But
so I was trying to decide. Smaller, like, but it's not like, oh, it fits in my pocket now. Small. So, like, it almost seems like a borderline irrelevant, like, size difference.
Yeah, because, like, it almost could be smaller, I think.
Well, I mean, because, like, you have to throw your Switch. Like, if you're going to bring your Switch, you either, like, carry it awkwardly or, like, throw it in a bag, right?
Yeah.
And this new Switch Lite, like, definitely seems to be the same with regards to that, you know?
I would say even, like, a regular PSP is too much to stick in your pocket. I mean, it's pocketable, but you can't bend over, you can't sit down. You know what I mean? Like, it's a bulky thing. And I feel like this is larger than that. And same with the Vita. I mean, the Vita is small and easy to take with you, but it's not pocketable, you know, like a PSP Go or like a phone or something like that. So, yeah, I wouldn't even be mad at an even smaller Switch Lite, to be honest. But then you get into the, like, I don't know, do you really play Breath of the Wild on like a 3-inch screen or whatever? So, so there's a PSP.
PSP, so that's bigger than a PSP even. The PSP was quite a big...
Yeah, it's really not that much smaller than a regular Switch, to be honest. I mean, it's significant, but not. I mean, you'll notice the difference, but it's not like crazy smaller. So, anyway, but I do like that size, even just for regular play. Sometimes I wish it was a little bit smaller. So I'm kind of on board with the size, and I'm on board with it being one unit, and whatever. But other than that, I can't really think of a reason I would just need to get a new one.
Yeah.
As opposed to, I mean, I already have a Switch. I feel like people that don't have a Switch now, this is a cheaper entry point to the world of a billion great games that you can play in handheld mode. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
And since I feel like, at least maybe this is just in my part of the world, but like playing docked is much less popular than people playing in handheld mode. Everyone talks about like they love their Switch because they can take it, you know, place it, and whatever.
I saw a thing that was like... 30% of the people play it handheld mode only, and like I think it was 20% play docked only, and then like 50% kind of like alternate between the two and like don't really care.
I could see that being about right. But I mean, that's definitely it. I don't think it's worth trying to get rid of my existing Switch, getting a new Switch, transferring all the crap over. Because even though I don't play in docked mode, I kind of like the idea that I have the ability to if I want to.
Yeah, because like if people came over and they're like, oh, Jared, you got a Switch? Like, let's play some Mario Kart. And like you only had this this Switch, it would kind of suck to be like, oh, well, I guess huddle over my shoulder and let's pair a Joy-Con to it and all this other junk.
What I do think is cool is you can play, you can connect these to a singular Switch and play multiplayer. Which I don't know, I guess you can do that with Switches now too, but I mean, it works in that functionality too. So if you got together and say, there's six of you, but, four of you have a Switch Lite and one of you has a regular Switch, you can take your Joy-Cons off and you and a buddy can play tabletop mode and then everyone else can join in the game playing on their own Switches and you can all play Mario together or something like that. So like, that's kind of cool. But yeah, I don't know. I think I'm not going to jump on one of these, even though it's tempting to just buy anything that's new. I think I'm going to wait for, a lot of people are thinking that next year by next holiday, they'll have a Switch Pro or some sort of revision that has more power or something like that.
Well, so the other interesting thing that came out, is that the Switch is getting kind of like a silent re-release with, a slightly different processor in it, which people think are going to, is going to get just a tiny, tiny, tiny bit battery life, better. Because it's got, I think it's made, I don't remember, it's a smaller die size with the processor, which typically when consoles do that, that's like where like the PS4 Slim and stuff comes from.
Right.
So it's interesting that Nintendo would just kind of like silently just start putting those in the box instead of the other ones.
Yeah.
But
maybe it just made sense because they're probably using that. I mean, you know, the technology advances, the prices for these things drop and stuff like that. So sometimes you see that in mobile devices all the time where new components get put into like the same existing kind of like devices. And so maybe since they're producing these, they're like, well, we're still making original Switches like hotcakes. So
yeah, it honestly wouldn't surprise me if like, so NVIDIA has, I think it's TSMC make their processors, and it really wouldn't surprise me if they're like, guys, we got to get off this old fabrication style. Like let's rejigger this so we can get it on the stuff we're doing now, because we don't want to keep this line open or whatever else. Like, it really wouldn't surprise me if something like that was happening and Nintendo was just like, all right, well, like if it's the same, like whatever, that's fine.
No, it makes sense. And even like the different generations of like PSP and stuff like that, like have different kind of internal hardware, stuff like that. The performance isn't drastically different between them, but you know, they are different components. So
And it makes you wonder.
I really do hope there's like a full blown Switch Pro or whatever next year.
Yeah, that would be neat. I would definitely rebuy if it was a matter of like, oh, 1080p screen and like it, you know, everything just works like it would be plugged in. Like, that would be super cool. So
agreed.
We'll see.
Agreed. All right, with that final off topic bit, well, I guess that's kind of off topic.
Let's drive this podcast off the mountain.
Drive off the overpath. thank you so much for listening to the Tetra Arcade Show. As I failed to mention in the beginning, Tetra Arcade is primarily supported through our readers and listeners. So if you like what we do, please consider visiting patreon.com/TetraArcade and consider supporting us by as little as $1 a month. Our Patreon has been slowly dipping, so I really need to figure out a way to kind of revitalize that, which is, I got some things in the works. Also, you can support us by doing your Amazon shopping through tetraarcade.com/Amazon. We get a little tiny bit of whatever you'd be buying through Amazon anyway, so that goes a long way towards helping us out. And anything else I need to mention?
I think that's about
it. Any more Game Club shilling you need me to do?
No. Gameclub.io, put your email address in. You get emails, all just free games. It's like getting a gift in your inbox every Monday.
It's funny because like the Game Club shilling is like just a joke because it's so easy to talk about Game Club because it's like, hey, here's a bunch of really good games that are proven great games that you can go play for free right now with no strings attached.
Yeah.
Why aren't you doing it? You know what I mean? So there's really no problem talking about how awesome Game Club is. So anyway, with that, thanks so much for listening, and we will catch you next week on another episode of the Tetra Arcade Show.
All right. See ya.